evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your latest installment of the Gelsnet Weekly Podcast, hosted by myself, Craig Gray. The independent Rangers podcast made for fans by fans, and all of our content is free. You can get us over on Twitter at Gelsnet Online and over at the website at gelsnet.co.uk, where you can get access to the forum, articles, and a good history archive as well, ladies and gentlemen. Just before we jump in and introduce my guest today, I want to firstly give a message from our sponsor, Forbes Precision Engineering. They are a subcontract Glasgow-based engineering company who have been a big commercial supporters of Rangers for many years. And we're absolutely delighted that we're backing your podcast. You can get them over at forestprecisioneng.com. And you can also visit the Forbes Precision Executive Lounge, a stunning new hospitality area within the historic main stand. For information on how to book this unique and intimate space, you can email the club via hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Obviously, tonight, guys, we were hoping to bring you a review of our game at Dundee, but unfortunately, climate change has kind of put an end to that. So I've stopped driving the motor, I've stopped using aeroplanes, and I've started eating lots of veg and carrot and dinner. I don't even know if that does anything to do with climate change. But thankfully, Gelsnet isn't affected by climate change, much like our stadium 20 yards down the road for Dens Park doesn't seem to be affected by climate change, and we're all here tonight. Joined firstly, Scott Bradley. Scott, I like your 2016 Adidas Gone Out in Glasgow polo shirt. I remember wearing that years ago. How are you doing tonight, mate?
I'm not too bad, mate. I've been floored with the flu all week, but I'm on the mend and I'm ready to go, mate.
Ah, well. Christ, you've got the flu in your back here, talking to me. Absolutely brilliant. What a day you're having. And we know that. And also need to introduce a debutant, Mr. Ben Harshaw. Ben, I feel quite bad for you, mate, that you're making your debut with us two idiots, but I'm sure you'll keep us right. How are we doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Long-time listener, first-time caller, as it goes. So, looking forward to jumping on, yep.
That's fine. You can just make sure that Scott's Hugh Evans and I'll be somebody else. don't do that. But obviously, first things first, we need to talk about the game that never was and might not be last week and now this week at Dens Park. Where do you start? All the words in the world have been used to describe this. I don't really think we can say anything that makes more sense than what's already happened, because nothing does seem to make sense at the moment. Obviously, on Tuesday, it was announced later on the day that there was going to be a pitch inspection at 11 o'clock, I believe it was, round about the time that it was going to start raining at Dundee. Then a further pitch inspection at 3:30. The game was off about, 4.5 hours before it was due to start. Fans had already started to make their way to the stadium. Scott, I'll start with you. It's just another embarrassing episode for Scottish football, to be honest. And, it's a sorry state of affairs we're in that we can't even get a game on at this crucial stage of the season.
Yeah, 100%. And, Craig, I remember when I woke up on the Wednesday and obviously I seen that there was going to be a pitch inspection. I think it was at like 11:30. Then there was going to be another pitch inspection at 3:30. And then I seen obviously the weather and some clips from Dens, and I was like, this game's getting called off. It didn't shock me in the slightest. And yet again, it's just another embarrassing episode in Scottish football. And I can imagine Sky, they're absolutely fuming. They're seething, because that's another game that was meant to be on Sky. Massive game for both sides. Dundee going for top six. Obviously, Rangers going for the title, and it gets called off again. And obviously, it's been rearranged for next week, but there's not even any guarantee that'll go ahead. It really is embarrassing. It's not a good look for a game whatsoever. And of course, we're going to talk about the governing bodies as the show goes on, and obviously their lack of leadership throughout this whole debacle. And yeah, it just really is. For example, the folk down south, right, who slag Scottish football off. This just gives them even more ammunition to continue to slag our game. It's just not a good look. And obviously, it was on Sky, and it got called off for the second time. And in my opinion, it probably will get called off next week as well. And at that point, what do you do?
Well, let's hope it doesn't get called off next week. It's been bad enough already. But you've made a good point there, Scott, about a lot of people down in England do rip the mickey out of Scottish football. And I have seen a lot of, and I'm a passionate defender of Scottish football, I have seen a lot of fans, it is mostly your sort of like Aberdeen's, Hearts, Hibs. You know, when you see maybe people on Twitter or TikTok and all that, maybe slag off Scottish football, and they're saying, oh, why should we listen to these people anyway? They're nobodies, they're losers. I mean, you know, I don't really like the way that social media has kind of taken over football, but at the end of the day, these are the people that you need to market to in order to make more money. These clubs moan about, you know, not having access to money, not having access to funds. Well, I can tell you something, that, you know, Dundee not having an adequate pitch, that's a choice. They've managed to spend a lot of money this year on players that they clearly can't afford. Guys like Owen Beck coming in from Liverpool twice. Players that teams like Motherwell and Hibs, I'm sure, would like to have spent money on guys like that who are competing with them to try and get into the top six. So I think, it's all well and good signing the best players, but you need to actually have a place to play those best players. Ben, obviously a lot of talk's been around punishment or potential punishment. You know, firstly, I want the game to go ahead. You know, I'm not one of these people that wants to be given points and winning leagues via proxy. We can leave that to another half of Glasgow to do that. But what's your opinion on the whole situation, and do you think that Dundee should be punished for this?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with Alison said there. We basically, I don't overly care what the people down south or the people that are going to slag our league off say. However, when you do try and defend it, normally, and you look at the quality in that game last week.
You back with us, Ben? I think I've just broke up a bit.
Apologies, sir. My internet seems to be playing up. But anyway, as I was saying there, I don't generally care what the people say down south about the league. I love it, and they can say what they want. I mean, if you look at the quality in that game of the week, entertainment value versus, the Arsenal Man City game the week before in the Premier League, there's no contest. But, it's very hard to defend the league with things, I guess, because amateur, embarrassing, say what you like, use any word that you want. It's just shambolic, really. Any tough light, of course. If we're in the middle of a harsh winter, I totally get it. You could have a frozen pitch, you could have a snow, things like that. I do get that, but where we are now, and how poorly it's been handled. I think Dundee, definitely there has to be some sort of punishment. I mean, obviously, I'm biased towards the fans that travel, from further afield as well as the local ones. For some people, they're shelled out on ferries, on people, on boats, on flights. Twice is absolutely just. So I think there has to be some sort of punishment. I think once you can kind of understand it to a certain level, but twice is unacceptable, and the possibility that it could happen a third time, well, it doesn't, but the possibility there is, I don't want points that we haven't earned, because as you sort of alluded to there, I wouldn't want to win a league by default. So moving the game is a logical thing, but do we see the logical thing within Scottish football very often? No, we don't.
No, we certainly don't. I mean, there's two things that really bug me with us, and it's not really anything to do with Rangers, to be honest. First of all, it's the sheer arrogance of Dundee Football Club, most notably John Nelms. When you see the guy's interviews and stuff like that, the way he comes across it is he does seem very arrogant. It's almost as if he doesn't care. We don't have a backup plan. The backup plan is, we'll just rearrange the game for next week. We will not play a game at a different venue under any circumstances. Who does this guy think he is? This is a guy that, 3-4 years ago, basically controlled the destiny of the Scottish League title. An owner of a championship club at the time, and they're having their say again 4 years later. And the thing is as well, Dundee fans and the people of Dundee are also going to be affected by this. If you think about it from an economical point of view, Dundee would have shelled out for food and drink, for hospitality. There's workers there, casual workers, not just the people that work in the sort of hospitality trade at the stadium, but think about Sky, the people that they bring up, the Dundee TV production teams, you know, the Rangers TV production teams, like all these people who are on sort of semi-regular, you know, 0 hours contracts, who don't have, you know, guaranteed income. They think of the impact on the local businesses. I know any time I've been like at an away game up in Dundee, you always go to a pub or whatever before, you know, so how many of those pubs are going to be impacted by no fans coming in? And John Nelms just doesn't seem to care. And it's like, it's one thing no caring about, you know, the opposition fans and, or, no, I mean, it's not great, but, you know, that's his prerogative. But to then not even care about your own fans, it's absolutely ridiculous. And then, so that was the first thing. The second thing that's bugging me is not the arrogance of Dundee, but also the entitlement that I've seen the last few days about, well, clubs that are in Europe, you know, Rangers and Celtic should pay for Dundee's pitch to be in a good condition. No, absolutely not. I heard somebody the other day mention about, you know, in the Netherlands, they've got a scheme where the clubs in Europe basically put money into a pot to allow good pitches across the league and stuff like that. And all the clubs agree to that. To be quite honest, I'm not a fan of that, you know, as it is, because quite frankly, when Rangers and Celtic or whatnot are in Europe, there's already a trickle-down impact on other clubs in the league. Other clubs in the league already get bungs from Rangers and Celtic having runs in Europe. So like for a couple of years ago when we got to Europa League final, there would have been teams in the SPFL. I think Dundee actually finished bottom that season, but Dundee would have still got a UEFA payment, because that's what happens once the money goes to one club in the league for doing well in Europe, it's distributed towards the rest of the league as well. So they should be spending that money on it. But Scott, for me, the clubs shouldn't be coming together to put funds towards clubs that just don't want to spend money on the upkeep of their stadium. If the clubs are going to put together and make a fund for people, it should be for the fans that are impacted by this. It should be for the contractors that are impacted by this. If the clubs are going to come together and put a wee bit of money towards something, in my opinion, mate, that's what I've got to put it towards, and not just give it to clubs who are clearly just going to put it to waste.
Yeah, 100%. No, I agree, Craig. And one thing that's really annoying me is just the fact that they, like Dundee as a club, I'm talking about obviously the people in the board, etc., they don't seem all that bothered by this, like, whatsoever. Like, yous are going for top six here. This is a massive game for yous, right? But these don't really seem all that bothered. And obviously, I seen something the other day that apparently they put this, I don't know how, when this was, right? But correct me if I'm wrong, but did they not place essential ground staff on gardening leave? Is that true?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's not a good look as well. They're not taking it seriously. And I feel as though the punishment that they're going to get, because obviously it's I seen in during the week in the press that they will be getting punished, but this just can't be a wee slap in the wrist. They need, like, the SFA and the SPFL, they need to make a statement here, because Dundee have embarrassed Scottish football massively, right? And they need to make a statement. I'm talking about a hefty fine. I don't want to see points getting deducted or anything, right? I don't want to see any of that, because that's unfair on the fans. The Dundee fans have done absolutely nothing wrong here, right? The board should be getting punished here. And obviously, if they get hit by a hefty fine, the board will be devastated by that. They would probably much rather take a points deduction than get hit by a hefty fine. So if they get hit with a really strong fine, that'll send a strong message to other clubs that if you don't take care of your pitches right, and you get more than 4 or 5 games postponed in one season, you're going to get punished for it.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about hefty fines, I think, you know, if Dundee end up getting into the top six, you know, they're doing it basically so that they get a wee bit extra prize money, and they also get bungs off having an extra couple of games against Rangers and Celtic, you know, a wee bit of extra Sky revenue as well. Personally, if it was me and I was at the SPFL and Dundee did make the top six, I'd just say, you're not getting your prize money this year. That include that in the fine. Any money that you make for getting in the top six, nah, you're not entitled to that either. You know, it does need to be punishment, you know. I look at Motherwell, who, you know, I mean, Dundee are probably a bigger club than Motherwell, you know, just because I like the sort of, because Dundee live in a city, Motherwell live in a town. You know, Motherwell spent over £1 million the last few years in their pitch. And, you know, I thought it was poetic justice, to be quite honest, that Motherwell got that win last week at Dens Park after, I think, you know, the referee was maybe forced into making that decision, as people have alluded to. Ben's having a few issues there, guys, as you can see. So me and Scott are just going to continue to ask you about this, Scott, just about the governance of the game. You know, pathetic leadership. The thing that really gets to me is, and it's something that I've noticed, like there's been a trend the last few years, it's that the SPFL don't really seem to have a rule book. It's the most vague rule book, like, of any organisation I've ever seen. Now, if you look at big moments or big incidents that have happened in Scottish football the last few years that have required a vote, that have required punishment, you look at, obviously, suspending the leagues 4 years ago, there was no, like, contingency plan in place if the league finished early for whatever reason. What do we do? There was nothing at that put in place. Even after that happened, there was still no contingency plans about what would happen if that ever happened again. So, theoretically, if we were to stop the season now, for whatever reason, Rangers would get handed the title because it would be done on a points per game basis. But then, how many games would you do it after? Because there's nothing in the actual rule book. It's just all very vague. Same with the pitches. There's no actual rule as such about pitches. It just says your pitch must be up to a good standard. That can be interpreted in any way that you want. And it seems to be that these rules are in place so that they can just make it up as they go along. And in my opinion, do it to suit specific clubs and specific people's agendas. Because to be quite honest, the last 10 plus, the SPFL was formed in 2013. But in my opinion, most of the big decisions that have been made in that time have been made to suit one club. And I think the vagueness of the rules actually helps with that, Scott.
So I know what you're saying about like how they make the rules up as they go along. Yeah, we've seen that for a long, long time. They're very incompetent. There's no leaders at the SFA and the SPFL whatsoever. But at least down in England, they've got their stuff all sorted, right? They're a proper organisation, whereas here it's just a comedy show where we've still got Neil Doncaster in Scottish football. Ludicrous, right? He's the amount of money he's making of being in our game is a disgrace. It really is. And what good has he done since he's been in Scotland? I couldn't list off anything like that he's actually achieved and that's actually benefited our game. Like, even when you look at the sponsors that we've got as well, it's in the TV deal. Or just don't get me started in the TV deal. Like, they just don't, like, even in terms of promoting our game, they don't even know how to do it as well. And As we were saying earlier on, there's just the lack of leadership, especially when it comes to this issue with Dundee. 5 games have been called off this season, right? And now they're talking about finally getting a punishment. And do I think they're going to get hit with a heavy one? Probably not. It's just going to be a slap in the wrist because the SFA, I don't think they want to really hammer, like, with all due respect, wee clubs like Dundee. But they really should, though. But obviously, as I said, there's no leaders at the top of the game, so I highly doubt anything will come from this, to be honest, Craig, in terms of anything significant for Dundee in terms of punishment.
Yeah, I can't see either, unfortunately. I think that's Ben back with us now. I think we'll probably just leave things on the Dundee debacle there, and let's just hope that this game gets played next Wednesday. But Ben, I'll come into you now. Obviously, we had that game last Sunday at Ibrox. I genuinely don't think I've seen an Old Firm game like that in my life, to be perfectly honest with you. To describe it as a rollercoaster of emotions would be putting it lightly, to be quite honest. You know, obviously we didn't have a game midweek, so I thought we may as well speak a wee bit about the game last Sunday, just the sort of major talking points. Firstly, Ben, in terms of the referee, John Beaton, there was a lot of pressure under him coming from certain people last week. And to be quite honest, I thought he probably did get the big decisions right. He's not my favourite referee. I don't particularly think he's talented, but I suppose, you know, there was big decisions. There was the two penalties, in my opinion, stupidity from Conor Goldson. We'll come on to him in a wee bit. The Silva penalty, it's a penalty. Does Silva make a meal of it? Is Silva being clever? Yes, absolutely. But is it a penalty? Yes. And to the Celtic fans that are accusing him of this, that, the next thing, you guys were the ones outside Celtic Park the day before the game saying by any means necessary. So Silva just got that penalty by any means necessary, guys. Then obviously the Dessers equaliser. I think it was a foul, but I think maybe the discussion would be, is that the attacking phase of play? But, you know, I think he got all the decisions right, to be honest. Ben, what was your take on the referee's performance at the weekend, and just generally what was your feelings around the game, maybe before it, immediately after it, and now that you've had a wee bit of time to reflect as well?
Yeah, hopefully that's be sorted now. Apologies for the internet problems. It's just been the worst cameo since Joey Barton. But anyway,
It's climate change.
That's it. On the referee, I think it was a stupid appointment to give him that game so soon after we know what happened with Rodgers. But again, that goes down to the governing body, which you guys have just talked about. You know, they put him in a bad decision. But I have to be honest, I think he did. I'd agree with you. I think he did get most of the main things wrong. I mean, I can pick at certain things. One thing that annoyed me early on, not a big decision, but Carter Vickers kicked the ball away. That's an automatic yellow card. You know, it's not given. And the only other thing that I would say that he got wrong, I think Johnson should have been booked for the penalty. A player's gone past you like that in the box. I would say that's the second yellow. Maybe I'm looking at that with my Rangers hat on, but you know, other than that, I'd have been looking for the Dessers goal. If it had gone the other way around, I'd have been looking for it to be called off. At the time, I was obviously probably a little emotive and thought it was wrong and thought we were being robbed, but having looked at it again, I think, yeah, it was the right decision. There was probably enough time for Sel to get control of the ball. Probably, but you know, it was only sort of 30 or so seconds, and it was still the same phase of play, because Silva picks the ball up directly and then drives with it after the foul by Lawrence. So yeah, no, it's a fair decision. The penalty is a penalty. Connor Goldson is stupid. You know, he's you just know. I mean, how do you think you're going to get off of it with VAR there at this point? It's a penalty. Again, I'd be looking for it if it was the other way around. And our penalty, yes, Silva makes the most of it. I didn't like his diving or play acting earlier on in the game. But there, if you know, you have to go down if a player makes contact. He's gone past him. He has fouled him. And yes, he goes down probably too easy. Makes the most of it, all the rest of it. But it's a penalty. It's a foul. There's no doubt about that. The game itself, I went in expecting us to win, as I'm sure most did. You know, home game. But I almost felt at the end like we did, given what the game gave to us. You know, at halftime, you know, the title was over, it was done. We showed real character, we showed fight that I didn't think we were going to come back into that game. I really didn't. And then to go down 3-2 the way we did, we showed a game, we showed character, we showed fight, we showed that the squad are trying to give their absolute all to get us this title. And, you know, there's encouragement in that. You know, I still think it's probably an opportunity missed, you know, in the cold light. But at the end of the day, if you're 2-0 down at halftime, you take the point without a doubt. And you know, having reflected on it over the week, yes, I'm edging towards opportunity missed. However, we're still in the position where the league is in our hands, as obviously it is theirs. But, you know, we have that game in hand, and we can go top of the league. So if it ever gets played, then fingers crossed we will be at the top of the league, and then the pressure swings again, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, going into it, like yourself, Ben, I was expecting a win. Those hopes kind of dropped when I seen the starting 11. And, you know, I said, Scott, last week, if Yilmaz doesn't make it, and I'm not saying this with hindsight, right? And you know, Borna Barisic clearly has not been great for Rangers this season, but you know, genuinely, I thought he probably could have went in there just because he gave us a natural balance at left back. I think I said it on the pod a couple of weeks ago that Sterling playing at left back will still give you everything. And by the way, I thought Sterling had a great game, so I'm not having a go at him at all, because he had a brilliant game. But you could say that the first goal comes from him making, like, giving that ball away after 20 seconds. But you know, I'm not saying it behind it. I genuinely think Barisic would have done okay against Kuhn. I think Barisic had issues with Abada before because he was lightning quick, he was easy to get past. I think Kuhn's a completely different player. And really, when we think about it, I mean, If you look at things, when Barisic has played badly against Celtic, you're basically just saying he's played badly against Abada, because he's also had games against Celtic where he's been good. I look at the game where we beat them at Parkhead in 2019. He had two assists for that game. He took the corner for big Phil Hollander's goal as well. So he's also done well in these games when you actually strip it back and look at it a wee bit differently. So I felt he could have done a job in there. I felt it would have gave us a bit more natural balance, and I would have rather had Steller on that right-hand side because, in my opinion, Celtic's left-hand side is a weak link. And everyone was saying before the game about, oh, we need to stop Callum McGregor, we need to do this and do that to stop him. No, we don't. We need to play the style of football that we want to play. We need to impose ourselves on the game. And we should be targeting their weak links to go and try and win the game. It shouldn't be about us stopping people. It should be about them stopping us. That was the attitude that I had. You know, obviously the manager didn't start Barisic, probably just because maybe he feels that he's just no go-to anymore for this season. And by the way, if that's what the manager thinks, I'm not going to go against him on that. You know, you'd rather see Sterling at left back. But it will be interesting to see if Yilmaz is not fit this weekend, if he still goes with Sterling, if he does go with Barisic. But we'll need to wait until Sunday to see that. But Scott, look, people have mentioned, yeah, opportunity missed. People have said, you know, 2 points dropped. But to be quite honest, I don't know how you can look at a game where you were never in front and you were 2 goals behind at half time, and then you go behind again after equalising, doing so well to get back into the game. I don't really know how you can look at that as 2 points dropped. Because I said it on Twitter the other day, it's like, we didn't have any right to win that game. I thought a draw was a fair result, but it's not as if Celtic like stole a point or anything like that. You know, I think, obviously, you go in every game you want to win it, but I think it's very important to look at the actual match itself, as opposed to what goes on before. For me, the only thing that matters is the match itself. And, you know, to be quite honest, you know, coming out of that, taking a point, like, where you were at half-time, then to do it again after being 3-2 down, I think that probably goes down as a good result on Sunday, to be honest.
Yeah, because see, if you said to me before the game that we would draw, I would have seen that as a defeat. And we said, because going into it, I felt as though it was a must-win game. But considering how the game transpired, at the end of the game when Matondo scored that goal, it was relief, and I was like, right, I'll take that all day long. That's a good result for Rangers. And when you actually break it down and think about it, right, that's a good point, because it's still in Rangers' hands. Because all Rangers need to do now is get a draw at Parkhead, win the rest of the remaining games, and Rangers are champions. That's all Rangers need to do. And it would be crazy, Craig, if Rangers go on to win this league without beating Celtic. That would be insane. But I've seen a lot of Celtic fans say online, yeah, disappointed, but yeah, great point, we'll beat them at Parkhead. See, if we went to Parkhead and we were winning 2-0, then Celtic brought it back to each, then we take the lead again, then Celtic scored at the last minute to get a point. I would be raging at that, right? But make no mistake about it, Celtic bottled that on Sunday. Celtic absolutely bottled that. And obviously, Celtic, considering the position that they were in, put it this way, that if that was under Postecoglou, I think they would have seen that game out.
Yeah.
But under Brendan Rodgers, they've gone backwards, they're not the same team anymore, and they crumbled. In the last 10 minutes of that game, Rangers were all over them. And obviously, there is a wee bit of frustration, though, Craig, that the fact that if Clermont just started with Matondo and Sima, I feel as though, I know hindsight's 20-20 in that, right? But if we just started with Matondo and Sima, that game could have been totally different. I think Rangers would have went on to win that game.
Yeah, maybe. I suppose we'll never know. But you make a great point there, Scott, about if the shoe was on our foot and we were 2 goals up at Parkhead and, you know, they came back and then we went right up the pitch and scored, me lost and equalised the last minute, I'd be raging at that. And we would be calling the team bottlers as well. I mean, people call the team bottlers even though they managed to come back twice. So what would it be like if we had a lead? I mean, the way that I see it, right, I mean, there's been a lot of people the last few days, well, Celtic-minded people saying that, you know, it's advantage Celtic. But they've already got this game in the split one at Parkhead. Quite ironic considering Celtic have dropped points against four teams in the league.
They've dropped 20 points this season, they've dropped.
They've dropped at home, they've dropped points against four sides, they've dropped points against St Johnstone, Kilmarnock, Motherwell and Hearts. So for Celtic to think that they're guaranteed a win against this resurgent Rangers team, who will have players back fully fit for that game at Parkhead, I think kind of shows the arrogance of them. And, you know, we'll see what they manage to do at home tomorrow against them. And Celtic, their home results have actually been what's cost them this season. It's not been so much the away results. But at the end of the day, I look at it quite simply. Celtic need to win the rest of their games to win the league. Rangers don't. Rangers can slip up and still win the league. Now, I don't want Rangers to slip up. I want Rangers to win the next seven games comfortably and, you know, the league's done. But we don't need to win our next seven games. We can drop points in a game and still win the league. Celtic don't. They need to win every game. So how on earth you can then derive from that that Celtic have the advantage when they literally need to win every game? I don't understand it. But, yeah, we'll just need to wait to see what happens. Just before we speak about our game tomorrow against Ross County, just want to give a message from our other sponsors, Football Prizes. They're a company who specialises in football competitions and match draws. You can see their latest competition over at footballprizes.co.uk, and it's an absolute belter. It's a signed 1972 Cup Winners' Cup squad signed shirt, and there's 13 instant win prizes as well. Signatures on that top are from guys like Willie Johnson and Colin Steen, the scorers that day, Willie Matheson, Dave Smith, Alec McDonald, Alfie Conn and Derek Johnson, who I've seen has match one top from this game, fetched a Scottish record for an auction shirt this week. So quite interesting news there. But you can get it over at footballprizes.co.uk, £3.95 for the entry, and there's 165 tickets available. The competition ends this Thursday, the 18th of April at 7:30. So get your entries in by then, and hopefully we'll have played the game at Dundee by the time this competition shuts, but we'll see. Ben, coming on to the game on Sunday then, which I think it will go ahead, fingers crossed it does. Need to talk about the potential starting 11. First of all, I wanted to speak about the midfield. Mohamed Diamande, manager announced earlier this week that he's going about with a thumb injury. So do you think that Raskin or Kieran Dill will come in for him? I'm doing that on the premise that Todd Cantwell will come back in for someone. But who do you think the manager will go with in terms of, do you think Raskin or Dill will come in as well to replace Diamande?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think on Diamande being out in general, I think I've been impressed with him, but I do think a little rest won't do him any harm, and sort of get hopefully out for one game, maybe two, and then be ready for that big push towards the end of the season. So I think that's a good thing for him, for freshness and stuff, having come in. But I would imagine, given going by the sub and stuff last week, I would imagine Dial seems to be ahead in the pecking order. However, I wouldn't totally write off Raskin at this stage. I still feel there's a player in there. He hasn't turned up this season, let's be honest, but I do think there's a player in there. I think if you're looking for a direct replacement for Diamande, I think Dial probably does that a little bit more in terms of ball carrying, you know, and compliments Lundstrom. I think it's disappointing in some ways, because I feel like Lundstrom's just been off the boil this last couple of games and probably could have done with it with a rest at some point himself, but won't be able to. I think it also depends on Borna, I think, because you could possibly bring Sterling into the midfield if Borna was playing at left back as well. But I would imagine that Dial will be the pick, what the manager will go for there.
Aye, I think it probably will. It kind of takes me back to the Motherwell game in December, I think it was, when Dill scored along with Cantwell. They two seemed to have a pretty good understanding. That was, I think, we scored twice in the first.
It's Christmas Eve, that, aye? Yeah.
Aye, Christmas Eve. And Dill was actually doing really well at that point, and obviously he got his injury in Spain, which was unfortunate. But I like Ben the sort of more attacking number eight, if that kind of makes sense, in games against teams like Ross County, that you should be dominating the ball, you should be looking to go forward, score as many goals as you can. I thought our best performance under Clement, people might say it was a Hearts game. For me, it was actually weirdly for some people, the Aberdeen game at home. Like, in that first half, I thought we were outstanding. And for Aberdeen to got back to 1-1 in the Stoke at half time, I thought it was just criminal. But just everything about that, wasn't it? I mean, Ross County, maybe in terms of, you know, chances created and stuff like that, was great. But for the Aberdeen game, it was a good combination of, like, aggression, passion, good football, creating chances. Like, it just had everything from that first half performance. But then we messed up towards the end of the half, but thankfully we got the win that night. But Scott, you mentioned Raskin there. I mean, just come on, just off that. I mean, I do think he there is a player there. I mean, he showed in his first 6 months when he signed in January that he is a decent enough player, but I don't know why just this season it's no really worked out for him. And I know you might think of him as more of a number eight, but could you maybe have it where Rask and Lundstrom are actually, you know, competing for that position rather than Rask and competing with the likes of Cantwell and Dowell and Lawrence and Diamandi, who are more forward-thinking players? Because, like Ben mentioned, Lundstrom has looked off the boil a wee bit recently, so it might be good to give him a rest. And Raskin's probably the only one in the team that could come in and take his position. But I've been really surprised, not just so much this season. I know he had the injury earlier, but since Clemence came in as well, obviously you're putting the Belgian connection together and you're thinking that he's going to really get a tune out of him. But it's just not really happened for him this season. What's your thoughts on him so far this season, Scott?
Raskin, it's obviously when Clement came in, I had high hopes of Raskin, obviously the Belgian connection. And obviously when we signed Raskin, I was very excited about what he could do for Rangers. But as you said, Craig, this season, he's not been really up to much. And especially under Clement, he's not delivered the goods. But in terms of starting on Sunday, I would do it. Yeah, I feel like we need to rotate the team a wee bit and give some players a wee rest, especially Lundstrom, because he is obviously, without doubt, he's been our best like midfielder this season. He's been so consistent. And sooner we get that new deal sorted for him, the better, because it'd be a big blow if we do lose him in the summer. Yeah, but I would like to see Raskin playing that Lundstrom role on Sunday. And I feel as though I feel like, because of the form of John Lundstrom, that's been one of the main reasons why Raskin has not been playing as much as he would like to under Clement. But yeah, in terms of this Sunday, though, I would like to see Raskin start. And it would be interesting, though, to have Raskin actually try and compete with Lundstrom for that spot, because I don't know how I would feel with a Lundstrom and Raskin midfield, basically two guys holding. I don't know how I would feel about that. I don't think I would like to see that, to be honest, especially if we're going to be doing it against like Ross County or whatever in Europe, perhaps. Yeah, but against the likes of Ross County teams, that we should not be playing two holdings against, absolutely not. So yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Raskin starting Sunday. Dowell, I thought he had a decent showing last Sunday when he came on, and obviously he was unfortunate with that injury, because I do feel like Dowell is a good player, but injuries this season have not been kind to him. But yeah, going back to what I said, okay, I'd like to see some rotation this Sunday. Even Connor Goldson, I think he's been off the boil a wee bit. When he's not playing, we do see that his presence in that defence is missing. And obviously, he still is one of our best players, Connor Goldson. But on Sunday, I would like to see maybe him come out of the team, maybe start Balogun and Suter together. Because I think Balogun, one of the main reasons why we brought him into the club was for games like this. He was brought in as a squad player. And Balogun, anytime he's played this season, with the exception of the Celtic game at Parkhead, he's been solid. He's been good. So yeah, that's who I'd like to see coming for Conor Goldson on Sunday as well.
Yeah, I was going to mention Conor Goldson a bit later, but Scott's just mentioned there, so we may as well. Ben, I mean, he's been really off the boil this season, and I don't know what's going on with him. The thing that's kind of got me, or that I find unusual about it, is that we have seen it before where Goldson's had one, maybe two games max where he's not been at it, but then for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 games, he's properly on top of his game. But he's been on a rut now for a good 4, 5, 6 games. I mean, I think back to the Motherwell game a few weeks ago, Theo Bear just tore him apart, to be quite honest. I mean, where did he start on that performance? Sunday again, you know, just decision-making. I think his decision-making was off, which is odd, because normally his decision-making is very good. I mean, that penalty, it's... The weird thing is, right, so I sat in the governing rear, but I mean, I think it might have been the same for most people. I did not see a handball at the time, so I was quite surprised when he went to do the check. But then, obviously, when you see it as a clear penalty. So I was saying, who was it that gave it away? And somebody just said, Suter. And then you kind of just went, okay, it was obviously him, because I do rate John Suter, but if someone's got a mistake in them, it's going to be John Suter compared to Conor Goldson anyway. So you were kind of going, Suter's, he's done it again against Celtic, you know what I mean, made a meal of it. And then it's like, no, it was actually Goldson that made the mistake. And then you watch it back and you go, I mean, what are you doing? Just that lapse of concentration. I don't know where it's came from. Towards the end, obviously, get taken off right after we equalised. And the thing is, I suppose we'll never know if it's because he was gobbed, he was tired, he had a slight injury, or if the manager just went, nah, it's too much of a risk, and we're bringing somebody else on just so that we can at least get a point from it. I mean, Ben, what's been happening with Clemson this season?
It's a strange one. I would actually say the player before he signed a new contract, going back that far, and the player after are totally different. And I think he's only been going in one direction since then. I'm not saying he's been as bad as he has been this last few weeks, the whole time, because he hasn't. But, you know, you go back to that own goal in Benfica. Of course, we're going to all score an own goal, but it was like a lack of concentration because it was so needless. You know,
and the one against PSV as well at the start of the season.
I've actually erased that from my mind, but thanks for that. So when you look at that on Sunday as well, it's like a player of that experience. How did you think you were going to get off of that with VAR, and what are you thinking? Like, you know, it's just stupid. Especially you look at the game. I know we were rattled, obviously, by going. Sorry, I'm going back into that game, but we were rattled by going 1-0 down so early. But like, you're 1-0 down, you know how big the game is, and you're going to just elbow them a penalty. You know, it's ridiculous. So I think the Goldson situation certainly needs looked at come the summer. And he needs to not be thinking like he has his entire Rangers career, where I'm guaranteed to play no matter what. He needs competition, and serious competition, to push him. And hopefully it'll be a case of getting the best out of him that way. You know, if you're asking me this Sunday afternoon, I was saying, get him out of the team, get rid of him. I'm now sort of closer towards thinking that we maybe stick at the moment, and then really address this situation come the summer. But I can understand, why people would be saying, let's make the change now too. I think it was the Dundee game away. We won 5-0. I think that was when, Balogun came into the team out of the blue, basically, and did really well. So I sort of think if we had played that game Wednesday gone, that he probably would have come in at that stage. And I'm not sure if that would have been Forsyth. The substitution was a strange one too, right at the end of the game, because he didn't look to be injured. I mean, we obviously don't know, but it was almost a case of, you know, it seemed like the manager was saying, we've got ourselves level here. This fella's having a shocker, and I need to take him off. That might not have been the case, but I don't know, given where we are in the title race, I would probably stick right now with the pairing that was there, but don't have any real problems if Balogun came in either.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, if you're going to take Goldson at the team, I think this game on Sunday is probably the one where you're going to do it, because, you know, we should win this game comfortably. And I think for the manager to do it, it would make a real statement, you know, because like you mentioned there, Ben, he's not really had any competition throughout his time at Rangers. And the thing is, I think he will know it, that he is the best centre-back at the club. Like, nobody does get close to him, to be quite honest, in that regard. And he knows that at least until the summer, he's going to have a place, because, to be quite honest, I mean, who have we got? Balogun, Suter, Davies is the senior ones, Leon King as a youth, so I'll no count him, but the three sort of senior centre-halves that he's competing against, you know, one of them's probably not going to be here next year in terms of Balogun. I really hope another one in Ben Davies isn't going to be here next season. I would keep Suter, but I don't think he should be starting every week. So we're probably going to need to go and buy two decent centre-halves to try and compete with Goldson, just on a numbers basis as well. And, you know, maybe he does think that, you know, at least until the summer anyway, I've got a place in the team, and then I've got 2 years left on my contract, and it's a good contract, and, you know, I'm at an age where, let's be honest, a club's not really going to come in with a massive bid for me. You know, and I've got security for the next 2 years. But it would be a statement if the manager done that. And I'm not saying drop him for the rest of the season, but even just for last game, see how Balogun and Suter do. And then, you know, just see what it takes us. And I remember 2009 title race with a month, round about this time actually, Walter Smith had no hesitations in dropping Barry Ferguson, the captain, and Alan McGregor, who was the best goalkeeper in the league by far. I mean, that's like a modern day equivalent of, come on, like expelling Tav and Butland for the team now. Like, it's unfathomable to do that. But Walter Smith done it back then, obviously for completely different reasons. It was a discipline issue, but it was a statement, and we still went on to go and win the league. You know, so I think if you're going to do it for this game against Sunday, against Ross County on Sunday. Show them that, you know, you're not guaranteed your place in the team, and just say, look, if you're not going to perform, there's going to be people here that are going to take your place. And that should be the same for every position, as far as I'm concerned, even as far up as Jack Butland. You know, there should be, if he's having a bad game, Robbie McCrory should be knocking the door saying, how am I not getting a game? He's just made a howler. But thankfully, Butland's no done that this season, but that's what we should have at the club. Scott, you mentioned Demela, Rabbit Matondo. By the way, we haven't even mentioned his goal. Wow. Seen a few Celtic fans blame the boy Yang for, you know, like not like taking him down the line and making sure that he cut inside. To be quite honest, you know, he's a winger. He's not really ready to defend that type of thing. You know, he'll show a winger the line because he's also a winger. But even after that, he's got so much to do. And I mean, you would have seen it, the camera angle that Rangers TV got just behind Matondo. And then it was like, as soon as it left his boot, and you could just see the dip on it. It was unbelievable, you know, an amazing goal. And to be quite honest, if that was Ali McCoist or Gaza or Loudrup that scored that, we'd be talking about that for decades upon decades. So fair play to Ravi Matondo. He's really stepped up in the last couple of games, and I've been probably his biggest critic, but he's made me my words right now, and good. I hope he continues to do that. Maybe the conundrum with him now is he's obviously doing well, but could he maybe be in that sort of Solskjaer position where he's a super sub? You know, that's where he makes his best impact. Because you did say, Scott, that you thought that having Seema should have started at the weekend, so I assume that means that you would want Matondo to start this weekend, but I've just get the feel with Matondo that if he does start a game and then maybe he has a couple of chances and he misses them, maybe his hero goes down again. Maybe, and there's nothing wrong with it, by the way, maybe a super sub is his best position. I don't know, what's your thoughts on him?
It's like, obviously right now, Matondo's confidence is sky high, right? And so I remember when he first came to Rangers, you could tell he was struggling. He was really struggling. I think, if memory serves me right, I think we were playing, I think it was Ross County last season, and Matondo was through on goal, and he had a howler. He got the chance, and you can tell, like, you can see, he's seen the flashes of quality in him. The signs were there, but mentally he was struggling, and the confidence was low. But right now, after that goal against Celtic, that goal against Hibs, he's firing in all cylinders right now. So a game against Ross County at Dingwall, obviously to right the wrong from what happened last season, he needs to start. So right now is the best time for him to, and for my opinion, start the majority of the games in the running, because he's on good form, and this is the best time to do it. So, like, Matondo is a super sub. See, obviously, we'll see how he does in the remaining six games if he does start, and just say he's better coming off from the bench, then I can agree with what you're saying about him being like a Solskjaer type of player, which is nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that, having a player like that that'll be a super sub. But I think he's got potential to be a regular starter for us, because the guy's obviously a Welsh international as well, and I think he's well thought of by the people at the Welsh FA. So I think Matondo, I think he will go on to have a good Rangers career, but we just need to, I think these remaining games will be so pivotal for him in terms of his Rangers future. And yeah, I would definitely start him on Sunday and right that wrong from what happened last season at Dingwall.
I hopefully can do that. If he's not, Ben, I'll finish with you, and we'll sort of continue the Matondo conversation slightly. I mean, the manager obviously brought on Seema at the weekend and played him out in the right hand side, which he's not really done in this season. But to be fair, Seema can kind of play anywhere along that front three. Do you think with the, you know, the injuries and stuff like that, or the lack of, you know, good enough players that we've got on that right hand side, do you think it could be a case for the rest of the season going Matondo on the left and Seema on the right?
Yeah, I think so. I think right now it's the most logical thing for us to do. I think just on Matondo there, I agree there with Scott. I mean, his confidence could not be higher than it's bound to be right now. Having done that 2 weeks in a row, and then having done it, you know, saving the game for us basically last week in the fashion that he did. You know, there is this talk about, will he be a super sub or can he be a starter? One, for me, the money we paid for him, he needs to be more than a sub, I think. But also, I think, you know, there is the talk of it. What is he? Is he a sub? Is he a starter? And I think if he doesn't get a start now after having done what he's done in the last 2 weeks as a sub, the manager's basically telling him, you know, you are a sub. I only see you as a sub, and the kid's going to think to himself, what more can I do to actually get a start in this team? Now, he may get the start and not deliver, and then that's a different story, but I think he deserves right now. I think he deserves the chance. I think Seema is more flexible, as you say. He can play across the front line, whereas when we've seen Matondo play on the right anytime, he hasn't done it. So I think you're better off. You can get something out of Seema by playing him elsewhere, whereas Matondo seems to me that he needs to play off, you know, off the left.
Honestly though, Matondo needs to start on Sunday, Ben, like, because as you said, like, and that, you made a great point in terms of how much we spent on him. Like, I get that point as well, because when you look at the amount of spent we spent on, you want a bit more than just a player that's just going to come off from the bench, because I think we spent about £2.4 million on him.
Yeah. I thought it was possibly more even, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. And apparently he's on a reasonably high wage as well within the squad. You know, as you said, he's an established international. He's the type of player. He was signed to be the type of player that can impact important games. And I think right now, given the competition and given what we have in the squad, I think he deserves a chance starting.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, because like obviously when you look at the last two games, obviously against Hibs and Celtic, he had an absolute blinder. But yeah, obviously it was a great show, Ben. Obviously, I don't think Craig's going to come back on. There's no point because we're ending the show. But yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Fully enjoyed it. But before we go, actually, what's your prediction for Sunday?
I'm going to go 3-0. 3-0 Rangers.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0, but as long as we get the 3 points. But guys, thank you very much for watching, and take care, and we'll see you very soon.